The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decisions. Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor, and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
Welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, which also broadcasts every Saturday morning, 10 a.m. on News Talk 990 WNTP in Philadelphia. I'm Steve Cordasco, and so happy you're joining us today. A study found that the number one fear of investors worldwide is outliving their money. Susan Tillery, who conducted this study, will join me to discuss these important questions. And questions like, should baby boomers really be concerned? Should they make riskier investments? And are people being misled by some advisors? Also joining the show, David Goodsell, Executive Director of the Durable Portfolio Construction Research Center. They're a research program dedicated to objective analysis and reporting on issues and trends important to investors, their advisors, money managers, employers, governments, and policymakers. They all participated in a study and found that investors and financial advisors have widely different expectations for annual returns. David will explain why this is so common. He'll also explain how your own emotions can be cutting your retirement savings. Last, Cordasco Financial Network's very own Steve Mangini, certified financial planner, will speak to me about life insurance. Why are less and less people purchasing insurance? Can you trust the agents to look out for your best interest? Those answers and more ahead. But first, let's talk about the number one fear investors have. Joining me now is Susan Tillery. Susan's a member of the American Institute of CPAs and chair of the PFS Credential Committee. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
So happy to have you here. We're talking about a recent article that that I found fascinating that the AICPA put out, talking about common fears of those in retirement. And there was a survey conducted saying that American retirees, their biggest fear is running out of money. You conducted a survey amongst financial planners. What did they say the biggest fear was? Did they conclude that?
Yes, it was running out of money so that they would be able to maintain their current lifestyle and deal with increasing health care costs. The survey was done of CPA financial planners throughout the country, and that is what they're finding with their clients.
Now, is that fear of losing money, is that limited to certain earnings threshold, or do you think it's more universal across the board?
Well, it's not necessarily of losing it through investments, but just running out of it. Because one of the reasons is that healthcare costs have gotten so much higher, and people are living much longer than they expected when they started saving for retirement. So both of these things have kind of caught up with them, and the fears about the stock market, as you mentioned, as well. So it's really a combination of all of those.
Well, it's interesting because if they're not fearful of losing it through investments, but yet they are fearful of the stock market, you wonder where that's coming from, because we've been participating here in our practice, and we're CPA heavy. We have not just traditional CPAs, but even those that study forensic work, right? So you dig a little bit deeper. And we try to balance out that technical side of our practice, right? The black and white, here's the rule, here's what it is, here's what the deduction, this is your tax return, did everything go where it needs to be? We've been also trying to balance that with a more behavioral finance approach, understanding not so much people's quality of not so much about their standard of living, right, which is, I think, lifestyle, which is what some of the financial advisors that you tend to traditionally talk to say, well, we have to maintain the standard of living of our clients. No, you don't. What about quality of life? And what I'm finding today is that most people will say, yeah, running out of money, that's my biggest fear. And I'll go into digging deeper into that, because they might say the stock market, But rarely, like you just said, it's not losing it through investments, which means the stock market, right? So where's the disconnect there? Everybody seems to say, well, my school taxes are going up. The things that I buy are going up. And even if we're living in a world of deflation, they're confused by that. Their Social Security raise isn't there. So they tend to feel squeezed. Are we as an industry, meaning financial advisors, insurance brokers, they hate using the word broker, but look, I have an insurance license, so technically you can call me a broker. Most get very scared and say, you're not supposed to say that. We're supposed to be these financial representatives, and we do what's best for people. But at the end of the day, they're scaring everybody about the stock market to get you to buy an annuity in the lowest interest rate period it would ever been in, of which we have the longest longevity of the 4 million baby boomers that are retiring. I don't know, what is it, on a daily basis, whatever, 10,000 per day that are retiring. Mm-hmm. I mean, is the industry creating the bigger problem here of saying you lose it through investments when the actual individual is probably realizing I'm losing it just through living day to day and having to get by?
Yes, because there's so many more years in their retirement. Just for example, a client of mine came to me at age 80. They had had a financial plan done back when they were 62. They had sold a medium-sized business, and that the plan had been computed based on him living to age 80, which was normal back then. But he is past age 80, and he has now run out of money. And the longevity really was the issue there, not the stock market, not the rate of return, not a bad investment advice, but the fact that he outlived the money that had been planned to get him through age 80. So what we will recommend to all of our clients is let us run your projections out to age 100. That is what our recommendation is. 95% are fine with that. There's some that feel, no, there's no way they're going to live till that, and they prefer to just go to 90 or 95. But we really recommend taking these projections out to age 100, so the client has a real sense of their money lasting for what the projected longevity will be. Because someone who is in their 65 or older right now has a very high percentage chance of living to at least age 88, if not 90. And so by the time they reach that age, it could be that medical technology and all of the research that's being done now could extend their lives even further. So we really recommend taking those models to age 100 so that the longevity issue is addressed.
We take it out to age 90. So you take it to 100. Let me, and this is fun because here's why. I used to take it to 100, right? And, and guess why I changed it?
Clients weren't happy with what they saw.
No, not with how much they had left, right? No, it wasn't about how much money was left. It was, do I really have to be 100? Because they're so involved with taking care of loved ones who are aging. And they sort of look at themselves and say, can't we do something? Meaning, nobody wants to see us end it at 70 or 75. 80 sort of gets a little bit. Somebody's sitting there at 78 and we ended at 80. It's not a good thing, right? But when you go to, if they're 78 and you run it to 100, there's a psychological thing there. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to live to be 100. I don't want to live to be that long. 90 seemed to be the sweet spot.
Yes. And as I shared, there are some of our clients who just, no, I don't want that 100. But there are others that do want to see. But that's really the key, is letting them know that longevity has definitely increased.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about a study that was just completed. And the American Institute of CPAs did a survey of financial advisors who also carried, I think, the CPA designation, right, Susan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so they kind of play in both worlds, taxes and planning. And they conducted this survey and found that the biggest fear was flat out running out of money. And some other subsects go in there, I would think, of running out of money. And probably expenses, Susan, is the biggest thing, right? And one of those expenses would be healthcare.
Correct. Correct. A study has been done regarding healthcare costs, and they are someone who is 65 today is expected to have to spend $245,000 on healthcare costs between age 65 and when they pass. That's a lot.
At the end of the day, knowing what you know from this survey, what advice can you give to those to help alleviate the fear?
My advice would be go to a CPA financial planner, a financial planner, any financial planner who is not selling, a fiduciary, someone that has no skin in the game, if you will, and will tell you what your situation is now and what it will take for you to get to the retirement that you are looking for. Mm-hmm. If you need any kind of annuity, they can tell you that and refer you to someone. If you don't, they can tell you what will work best for your situation. We are all very unique in our financial situations, and one product or one plan does not fit everyone. So don't listen to what friends are doing. Don't put together your plan based on information you're receiving from them. Go to a professional who will do a plan for you and be able to give you fiduciary advice. That's advice that's the best for you and your individual situation, not best for the person you're talking to.
Susan Tellery,
you want to go look for that fiduciary.
Great. Yes. Thanks, Susan Tellery. Really appreciate your time and the work you do as a member of the American Institute of CPAs. Thanks so much for joining us here on Your Life, Your Wealth.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Sure. You take care. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Steve Cardasco. Hey, find us on Facebook. Love for you to friend us. Facebook.com/CFN Plan. Join the many others who are connecting with us on social media. The thousands who we now have on Twitter at CFN Plan.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dreams? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cardasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cardasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cardasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cardasco. Joining me now on the topic of the relationship between a financial advisor and investor, and specifically when it comes to investment returns, is David Gotzel. David, welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here, Steve.
Yep, you're Senior Vice President, Director of Durable Portfolio Construction Research at Nexus Global Asset Management. I appreciate you coming on to talk about expected returns from individuals and expected returns from their financial advisor. A lot of the data that we're going to be talking about comes from the basis of a study that was completed. Can you talk about the study, how expansive it was, and the pool of financial advisors that you were able to speak to conduct the study?
Almost certainly. So the Durable Portfolio Construction Research Center, we conduct a number of studies annually, whether it be individual investors, financial advisors, institutional decision makers. We even talk to people in 401k plans to really learn about the issues that are driving their decisions, where they need some help with things. With the FA survey, we spoke to about 2,500 FAs around the world, including about 350 in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. So, and with that, what I found kind of enlightening was that when it comes to investment returns here in the U.S., right, we'll stick domestic here for a moment.
Certainly.
Financial advisors here in the U.S., when they sit down maybe with a client or a new investor or somebody who's coming to them for help to invest their money, maybe get some financial planning done, the financial advisor has a return expectation, an investment return expectation of somewhere around 5.9%.
Right.
But that investor has an expected return embedded in them of 8.5%. That's a big disparity. What's the reasoning behind the disparity, and is there a right or wrong here? Is the advisor undercutting for a certain reason, or is the investor overshooting for a certain reason?
Well, I think a couple things to note. Those returns are actually above inflation. So the expectations can be even higher. When you factor in inflation, we could be talking real returns of 10, 11, 12% that people have in mind. And, you know, advisors, when you look at that 5.9% add in inflation, you're at about the same as the historical average of equities over the long term. So what stocks are returning? And the way we've been looking at this is to say that, you know, investors are probably optimistic on what they can get. They have some hopes of high returns, great expectations on what they can get. Advisors tend to be a little more pragmatic, and that in itself is one of the great reasons to work with a financial advisor, because they give you that professional voice into what your thoughts are.
And yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, one of the key things we see there is, coupled with this desire for large returns, we also see that investors are very risk-averse. They really don't want to take on risk right now. So it's a challenge to balance out those two competing forces.
Now, one thing we do in my practice, so besides doing, you know, radio, which I've done almost 25 years, sort of a separate side career, but also run my own, you know, financial practice, is that you're exactly right. It's nobody wants to take risk, and yet they want returns. And when you talk it out, they get it at that moment. But something, is there some type of noise out there that clouds an investor? Or is it the fact that there's so many different pieces of information coming their way, or they hear sound bites on maybe a hedge fund that did a certain return, or they in the newspaper or online, they're seeing, you know, the fund of the year, which was up pretty high. What's getting into their heads that would make them not as pragmatic with regards to returns and how it relates to risk?
Well, I think that's the exact situation. There is a lot of noise. There's a lot of information that we receive in isolation, but we may not necessarily be putting that together in a holistic sense. You know, what can I actually accomplish with my investment portfolio? As a company, we actually look at things a little different at Natixis. Our view is to say, really put risk first ahead of the return. Mm-hmm. Think about how much you're willing to put at risk in order to achieve your results. And that helps shape a different kind of conversation. I'll give you a great example of this. When we asked individual investors in our previous survey if they consider themselves cautious or aggressive, about three quarters of the people we spoke to said that they're cautious investors. And then we asked them if they would prefer to take safety or investment performance. 82% of people tell us they prefer safety over performance. Mm. And that is, I think, the interesting part is often that's our biggest concern, that's our biggest challenge, but we're not necessarily putting it first in our thinking about how we're going to achieve our financial goals over the long term.
How much of emotions cloud an investor's willingness to achieve the type of returns that match up correctly with them?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. In terms of looking at high return expectations, high risk aversion, when you get into that situation, you're going to be looking at something that's going to drive you into an emotional decision. And one of the things we find is that individuals may have a blind spot when it comes to their ability to make rational decisions or the impact that those emotional decisions have. We saw it was only about a quarter of investors in the U.S. thought that if they could stop making emotional decisions, they could actually do better in their investments. Mm-hmm. And when we talk to advisors, they tell us probably the biggest challenge they have is preventing clients from making those emotional decisions. In fact, the advisors we spoke to say that is the number one mistake that individual investors make, that they allow emotions to rule their decisions. And I think that's the biggest challenge. You know, another part of the problem that advisors look for is how do you get an accurate picture of what that risk tolerance is? How do we understand what, as an individual or as a couple, that we can put at risk in order to pursue our goals? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big challenge. Often, I think it comes down to better education and really listening to an investment professional who understands what the different market factors are, what are the dynamics that go into creating a return, and getting a personalized understanding of that. When we ask individuals what they want from their advisor, education is always at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. Essentially, people look to a financial advisor to help them become a better investor, help them put aside those emotions and really make informed decisions.
Yeah, so one thing we're working on that I'm embedding in my practice, and it seems to be working well, and the beauty of being in a low return environment and a very anxious society today. I mean, just take a look at the political environment, right? Everybody's on it. I mean, the world is different. We've never seen anything like this before, blah, 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 right? I'm creating the backdrop of what there are in different triggers, right? To folks that might be baby boomers, let's say, right? Because that's when people tend to have a lion's share of wealth, or at least more wealth than they've ever had, right? Their peak spending years are over, their savings years have begun, they got this retirement thing going on, and all of a sudden they become more emotional because a 2 or 3% swing on the amount of money they have equals a lot bigger dollar value. And therefore, you know, they're looking at the backdrop, they're hearing sound bites, and there's all this emotion swirling around. And the key is, you're exactly right, is those blind spots. And how do you keep an investor away from themselves? And so we look for those triggers. And one thing I try to instill, and maybe some of your work has shown this, is we need to get to the root of where the anxiety is. And is the anxiety really, you think the market's going to go to zero? That's one I like to throw out there. Mm-hmm. Is the anxiety that you think you're going to see the market get cut in half. But what's really the anxiety? I had somebody the other day say, well, you know, I'm glad you're asking my anxiety and the fact that, you know, I told you that the market could drop by 50%, and you're telling me, Steve, that that's not really the root of my anxiety. It just dawned on me. It was that video I got in my email box the other day that talked about a very successful guy who made a lot of money, who predicted the last four bad times in our country, and he's predicting another one. And we had a fascinating moment, my client and I, in that where did that email come from? Why were you on a certain site that now you're part of a list that you're getting something like that? And what does that emotionally do for you? Where are you? And we had this moment of talking about the high anxiety and the fact that he is so bothered by his Republican Party and where it is today, and he absolutely thinks that, you know, the world's going to come to an end. And we had to get to the root of really what the problem was, and it had nothing to do with the stock market. It had everything to do with politics and the fact that the world might not be how he sees it or he has control over it. Fascinating stuff, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things we've been doing with the Research Center, too, is we've partnered with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, the Lab for Financial Engineering, and we've been running a series of questions in our surveys that support some of the work they're doing. And the idea there is to marry up big data with behavioral finance to understand how people make decisions. And one of the questions we've asked, not only individuals, but advisors and institutional investors, is what would you do if the S&P declined by 10 or 20% in a six-month period? Mm-hmm. And what I find really telling is that you see about 42% of individuals worldwide, this is, say they'll do nothing. Mm-hmm. About 41% tell us that they're going to decrease what they invest. And only 17% of people would actually increase their investment when the market has dropped that much. Turn it around and look at the professional investors at institutions, 71% of those individuals are going to buy into that dip in the market because they're going to look for opportunity and upside on it. Mm-hmm. So it's really being able to have a confidence to look at risk, to work with a professional and understand what's going to drive your decisions.
You know what's fun? I do it, you know, I do that as well, but then I throw a twist into it. And this is just 30 years of being in practice. So
sure.
Let's say somebody comes in and they say, you know, my company just got bought. I'm retiring. I'm done. I'm tired of my cheese constantly being moved. Help me out here. Credesco, I've been hearing your name out there, you know, on the Wall Street Journal and CBS, you know, Fox, you're out there, blah, here's my $1 million. And we try to test them to see, you know, how much tolerance they will be able to endure to see their money move around. And we throw it out there, you know, what if it drops by 10%, 12%, you okay? I would say 50% of the time, the answer I get when I talk percentages is different when I talk dollars. For example, I say, okay, you're giving us $1 million. Now, how are you going to feel if you open your statement and it's worth $100,000 less? You just lost it. That $100,000 means so much. It's so different than 10% means.
Oh, I'd agree. Absolutely. It's personalized.
Amazing, isn't it?
I mean,
it's just amazing. And well, like one individual said, geez, that's over a year plus of salary. I would have lost a year plus in salary. How the fact that they relate it, but you learn a lot from that individual. It doesn't mean you have to just kind of guide them somewhere else. You got to take that in and understand that that's big for them. That might tell me that they're frugal. And I can talk behavioral finance and this kind of stuff forever. I really love the work that you were able to do to talk about, you know, what expectations are from individuals with returns and then the investment community and what the reality really is comparatively to what expectations are from those that are investing. I could talk forever. Hopefully you'll come back and share more about the good work that you do there at Nexus Global Asset Management and the Portfolio Construction Research Center there. So, David, I appreciate the time.
Hey, appreciate your time as well. Glad to be here.
Yep. And ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. You can follow us on Twitter, the thousands that are there now, at CFN Plan, at CFN Plan. Also, go to Facebook, facebook.com/CFN Plan. Love for you to friend me there. Just keep it here on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.
Hey, Rich Dilley here. My friend Steve Cordasco, financial advisor and founder of Cordasco Financial Network, is back with a new retirement guide called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. This guy is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, how to successfully generate cash flow in retirement, and how to utilize great tax savings strategies. This guide also uncovers the best practices to reduce stock market stress, how to find investment solutions that match your risk tolerance, and how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement. Whether you are taking the first steps to retirement planning and don't know where to start, are in pre-retirement and looking to accumulate wealth, or already retired and looking to preserve your wealth, you should get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement, and it's totally free. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, and as in network, plan.com. Go right now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco, also broadcasting on 990 WNTP. Don't forget, you can always email me, Steve at cfnplan.com. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/cfnplan. And you can follow on Twitter at cfnplan. Joining me now is my good friend, coworker, Steve Mangini. He's a certified financial planner, charter life underwriter, and charter financial consultant. And here at Cordasco Financial Network, he's our insurance specialist. And we're talking life insurance policies. I know. We don't really cover a whole lot of life insurance. I haven't devoted a lot of years in my 20 plus years doing radio to life insurance. And I think I've left people short, to be honest with you. It's an important piece of the financial planning puzzle. And so I'd like to welcome Steve Mangini to the show. Steve, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the topic of life insurance. At what age should someone start to consider life insurance?
Yeah, one of the things that I always say is there really is no magic age to consider life insurance. It's much more about when are others going to be impacted by your early death. So, you know, if you have if you're 25 years old, 35 years old, 45 years old, and you're single and you're backpacking across Europe with no family and no kids and no home, you know, it's easy for me to sit down and say that person does not need life insurance. Mm-hmm. But if you're a mother, if you're a father, if you own a home, if you own a business, I mean, things like that, if people are impacted negatively, if you're not there, that's when we say there's a life insurance need, and let's start trying to work together and figure out what that need is and how we can protect it.
Steve, it seems today more and more people are declining to buy life insurance policies. Now, right. We are more of a planning-centric business, and you know, everything starts with a plan, and so we review and really look at folks' life insurance and whether they got the right amount of coverage, overcoverage, or undercovered. And I would say, on the surface, I mean, if you just take a look at our practice, we're not life insurance driven, right? So at the end of the year, I mean, how much do we actually end up as the overall financial plan of our type of practice? You would know better because you run our insurance group here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing, you're right. I mean, we approach this as a fiduciary, as an advisor, as someone who's looking to do what's in the best interest of our clients. So, you know, we really don't measure this based on how much insurance did we sell in this year. It's really more about looking at the overall plan, sort of uncovering the holes in that plan where they might be. And if there's a need for life insurance, we want to make sure that that's filled. So a lot of times what we'll do is say, hey, you know what? Bring your life insurance policies in. We'll take a look at them. You have the right amount of life insurance. You have too much life insurance. And for those situations where, you know, we identify a hole in the coverage, we'll look and say, let's work together to make sure you get the right amount of life insurance and probably just as importantly, the right kind.
I guess the beauty of it is at the end of the day, the feedback I get is that folks feel comfortable because there's been clarity or somebody's explained to them where the life insurance right. fits into the puzzle. Like, we had somebody not long ago who said, you know, I'm just going to cancel my life insurance. You know, the kids are grown. Right. You know, I don't owe any more money on the house. Blah, blah, blah. And then lo and behold, we brought up the topic of, you can do that, but why don't we wait a little bit? Because based on how this election goes, if they change the estate planning rules and all of a sudden, you know, the amount of an estate that you can have before taxation comes down, we did a whole show on it a few weeks ago, right. You might wish you had that life insurance policy and now trying to get underwritten at age 70 versus, you know, when you bought that insurance at age 40 is a big problem. Today, more and more people buying less life insurance?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, and you sort of hit on it there, life insurance is not fun, right? Life insurance is about thinking about your own death. If you want to buy a life insurance policy, most oftentimes you need to take a physical exam. You go to the doctor. I mean, I grew up with an older aunt who refused to go to the doctor, right? The first thing that happens when you go to the doctor, they find something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't go to a hospital. That's where people go to die, right? So you have, there's a lot of hurdles to buying life insurance. And, mm-hmm. and you think about the things that we buy as consumers. I can't think of anything less fun to buy than life insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you buy a new car, you have something, you bring it home, you know, there's something exciting about making purchases, even in your 401k, right? When you devote dollars to a savings plan, there's something tangible that you can see growing and feel good about. Mm-hmm. Life insurance is never for you, right? It's for the ones that you leave behind. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, for us to get past that idea of, well, let's keep putting life insurance to the bottom of the stack of to-dos because it's not fun.
Yeah, it's like going and getting your colonoscopy. Chris Robbins, I don't know if that name's familiar to anybody, but he's working on a story at Financial Advisor Magazine, which is a pretty good magazine for those in the financial planning industry. And he dropped me a line. He said, "Hey, Steve, I'm working on a story about tax planning for high net worth investors. And I'd like to get your input on this." So I haven't addressed you with this. I'm hitting you with this out in left field.
This is fun.
That's okay. This is how we roll here. Here's his question. And as soon as he threw the question out to me, I thought, oh, here we go. The question is, life insurance products appear to provide a good tax-efficient wrapper for investment gains. But is it worth the cost? Who should use it, if anyone, and are there any caveats? As soon as I see insurance and investments in the same equation, I start to shiver because I tend to like insurance for just that, insuring against death or helping offset maybe a tax bill down the road when we're talking high net worth individuals. But now all of a sudden, you know, all these products get more convoluted. You can have investments and protection. So where do you stand? How would you answer this question?
Yeah, it's this question and this topic, you know, keeps coming over and over, and we talk about it with our clients. And even the statement that interviewer made is filled with truths, but I would almost argue half truths. Mm-hmm. You know, so it is true that an insurance-based investment product can offer appreciation free from tax. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that sounds good, mm-hmm. right? It is true, he didn't say it there, but that through insurance-based products, there's ways to pull money out tax-free, right? So tax deferral, that's good. Tax-free, that's good. So if you stop there, it sounds like everybody should love these insurance-based investment products. The challenge, or the part that too oftentimes is left unsaid, is that there are additional costs associated with those insurance-based investment products. And those are the insurance costs, right? We talk all the time about the big commissions in these products, and there's mortality costs and so on. So the trick of this is, can you determine, and you have to make sure if it's a viable solution, can you overcome those additional costs with the tax savings? Mm-hmm. And too oftentimes we see this pitch to, you know, we looked for a client the other day. They're being encouraged to use one of these insurance-based investment products, and they're over 60. Right. So there's frankly is just not enough time for those tax benefits mm-hmm. to outweigh the heavy cost of insurance. So, you know, can it work for someone? Sure. If you had a 25-year-old person
yep.
who was making a lot of money and in a high tax bracket, that's someone who has low insurance costs. Right. They're young and they're healthy. So the insurance costs are small. And the tax burden that they're avoiding is big, mm-hmm. then it can make sense. But too oftentimes we see, you know, insurance agents looking to use their one solution
yep.
to fit in spots where it doesn't make sense. And frankly, just talking about the benefits without weighing out the downside.
That's what hurts the industry. You know, it tends to be the sales folks.
Right.
And when you have... You know, very, you know, when insurance is really the only product because you might not be securities licensed or have other licensures, right? So you're a certified financial planner, you're a chartered, you know, financial consultant, you're a chartered life underwriter, you know, you play in all worlds. And with that, and plus you're a fiduciary,
sure.
You have to operate in the best interest.
We're an RIA. Everything we do here is in the world of a fiduciary.
And what a fiduciary means yeah. that the client has to come first, meaning
correct.
Before you. In other words, you'd get a commission of $10,000 on something, and it might not be the best thing for the client. It's questionable. It looks like
right.
you're violating your fiduciary responsibility. Doesn't mean that... You know, you got to put the client first. Are insurance agents considered fiduciaries?
Well, the interesting thing, and not in the way that you mean. So you're talking about, are they a fiduciary to the client? And, you know, and right now they're not, you know, all this DOL with investments and things like that, it hasn't reached the insurance aging, selling insurance.
Right. It's for the investment community right now.
Correct.
So the insurance is regulated differently than the investment world.
Right. But here's the interesting thing. The traditional definition of an agent, so an insurance agent, they do have a fiduciary responsibility. That fiduciary responsibility is to the insurance company, right? So they have to act not in the best interest of the client, but in the best interest of the company. And that's not a bad thing. I say it more as just a, you know, let people know, right? So when you have an insurance agent, you know, the definition, what the word means is they're acting on behalf of the insurance company.
Interesting. What's the simplest way to get a life insurance plan in today's market?
So, you know, the simplest way, and this is interesting because here, and this is a topic we hit all the time in the office here, you know, kind of the difference between the greatest generation and Generation X and,
right.
and millennials and all those things.
And we have a lot of fun in the office.
So we have a lot of fun with it.
Paint a picture of our office is that we're kind of an open architecture, right?
Right.
When I wanted to architect the office, I wanted a lot of collaboration, open, and that openness creates a lot of fun too, right? So we have, you know, we had politics right. going on out there yesterday, and you know, we have millennials in the office, we got old folks like me,
and me.
And you, right, you and I are same age, and so, but it's fun, right? And
right.
So talk about what was going on that I might have missed out on.
Well, no, I'm sworn to secrecy on that, but what I was going to say is, you know, if when millennials, and even to some degree Generation X, are polled, you know, there's a LIMRA study that says, you know, really how they would prefer to buy life insurance. And this gets at what you said before about the agents and the biases and things like that. They'd rather buy it through the internet.
Right.
You know, the only trouble is they don't.
Right.
Right? So we're approaching 50% of the people out there not having the life insurance that they need.
Right.
You know, they say they need it.
Right.
They say they want to buy it through the internet. But it's just not happening. And I when you ask me what's the easiest way to buy life insurance, to me, I think, you know, if someone asks me what's the easiest way to get in shape, I think, you know what, the easiest, I've had the most success in my life,
right.
and you know, is getting a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Right? Getting someone.
I mean, I got mine through you.
Correct.
So the easiest thing for me was call Steve Mangini.
Right.
And then he got all the forms, he got some guy to come out and do the thing, and it's done.
So it's not only working with someone you trust and you know has
your
best interests in heart and all those things, but it's also the action of having that little bit of a nudge.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So all the studies show people know they need life insurance, they want to get it. But it's just that little extra nudge.
Now, right? On the other side of that, because you're talking Gen X and millennials, there's the other side of that where too many people have their life insurance sitting there collecting dust and
right.
it hasn't been reviewed. So you got to get that stuff looked at, because as the environment changes out there, as life dynamics change, as your world changes, you have to make sure that that piece of your financial plan, insurance, life insurance, is still doing what it's supposed to do, and it's still cost-effective for you. So, hey, Steve Mangini, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Steve Mangini is a certified financial planner here at the Cardasco Financial Network, and you can follow me and send an email to me or Steve Mangini. It's steve@cfnplan.com. You can also follow our firm on Facebook, facebook.com/cfnplan, on Twitter @cfnplan. I'm Steve Cardasco. Back in a moment.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dreams? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cardasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cardasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Great show today. Wanted to follow up with David Goodsell, who's Executive Director of Durable Portfolio Construction Research. He's been a fairly regular here on the program. They do good work, and I hope you found that interesting in how investors and their advisors kind of have a gap between what their expectations are with regards to returns. I also find that there's a gap between, I don't want to call it investors, but people who need help with their life and their wealth. There's a gap in understanding of what type of person they are, how emotionally connected they are to their wallet, and how that influences decision making and how much they want to share with their advisor so that the advisor can help them make better, maybe smarter decisions, see things in a more open way, which brings me to where we began our program and talked about, or not began our program, but within the program, talked with Susan Tillery with regards to fear and how much fear can influence people and actually cause a lot of mistakes in life as well as what you do with your wealth. And the fear of running out of money is something that is very common. We hear all the time in the media, in the news, on radio, TV, the fear tactic to try to get somebody who has money to buy something, to purchase something, whether it's insurance, an annuity, a stock, a bond, whatever it may be. And fear is a very easy trigger point to get someone and lure somebody to do something, which we covered in detail. We'll cover it more. But I also want to talk about Independence Day. It's 4th of July weekend, and this stuff can tie together. And I don't want to discount, you know, 4th of July. We think of fireworks and hot dogs and you know, hometown parades and time off of work. But it truly means independence. It's the fact that we are free. And as a free country, that has made us the greatest country. From a political standpoint, you know where we lean here on WNTP 990, tends to be a conservative leaning station. I believe in that philosophy that tax us less and support a free market system. Right now, that seems to favor more of the Republicans than Democrats. We can just take healthcare, for example, where they want a mandate. It has to happen. The free market should dictate it. And some are going to say, well, that leaves people behind. Well, then lower taxes. You lower taxes, my taxes, I'm hiring more people. That pulls more people into my healthcare coverage, which I hear is pretty darn good, that we have for employees. We have good people. You just heard Steve Mangini, who was on the program. And because we have healthcare coverage, our employees and their families get healthcare. But yet, almost half of what a small, mid-sized business or someone who is at a certain income level should not have to go to taxes to be redistributed in a transfer payment system. Let the free market system dictate it. It'll fix itself. Which brings me also to independence. Cordasco Financial Network is an independent financial advisory firm. I formed it because I wanted independence, the freedom to do what I wanted to do with helping people with their money. For example, when I didn't have that freedom and I was working for a company that would mandate and give you, sort of box you in on what you could do, most of the talk was about investments that we had, or numbers with individuals. Very little had to do with behavioral finance. So what I've known now, and what I'm able to practice, which is enlightening for me, is that I now understand that people have different minds. Some people are a fear mind, and their type of mind, on the money side, their wealth side, fear is a driver. If they're connected with somebody who doesn't have a fear money mind, you have conflict within two people within a relationship. So to be able to practice what I knew was true, that it's not just about numbers and getting somebody to return on the numbers. It's understanding who they are and helping them navigate those emotions and reactions that they have is very important. And the only way I can do it is with an independent firm that allows me the freedom to do it. Also, to be a fiduciary, which is big news today. We are a fiduciary across the board, not just with retirement accounts. That freedom, that independence allows us to do that and not have to fall under a mandate of another, of a different company who says, you're not going to be a fiduciary all the way. You can be there part of the way, but it really comes down to suitability. And if it's good for us and the client, then it's good for everybody. You don't have to put necessarily the client first. So that's independence in the freedom and my view of living a life. When it comes to wealth, I'm talking independence as well. I think independence is very important to be able to work with somebody who has that independence. And no better time to tell that story is right now, because we are recognizing our independence and our freedom as a country. So make it a great 4th of July week, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks so much for being part of the program. If you can, grab a hot dog, enjoy the neighborhood parade and the freedom you have to have the day off, those of you that enjoy days off. Thanks so much for listening to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cardasco.
Thanks for joining us on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. All of our shows are reproduced as podcasts and can be listened to on demand at your convenience. If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cardasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.